Hello and welcome back to my podcast. This is Lasky. Thank you for taking the time to check me out today. And I would like to dive into some of the most deadliest cults. So I truly wonder how people get wrapped up in joining a cult. Like, you know, under some circumstances, you know, people that have been going through a really hard time, troubled souls looking for comfort, and they can find in someone that chose care. But aside from that, it's just kind of crazy to think about. So the actual definition of a cult is a relatively small group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others considered strange or sinister. So today we're going to dive into some of the most deadliest cults in history. Just a fair warning, subjects may be triggering to those who have experienced trauma. We may talk about violent acts and potentially sexual topics. Discretion is advised. Number 1, NXIVM. This was an American cult that engaged in sex trafficking, forced labor, and racketeering. In New York, NXIVM labeled themselves as a multi-level marketing company that offered personal and professional development seminars, almost like a Scientology class environment. It had its executive success programs of large group awareness training. It was a recruiting platform for a secret society called DOS, which stands for Dominus Obscoitius Sorium. I totally butchered that. It's a Latin phrase roughly translated as Lord over the obedient female companions. Founded in 1998, Rainier and Nancy Salzman started their self-improvement endeavor. Their main emphasis is to have people experience more joy in their lives. He adopted the nickname Vanguard from a 1980s video game in which destruction of one's enemies increased one's own power. He believed that he was a leader of a philosophy movement, and Nancy was his first student. By 2003, over 3,000 people had participated in these ESP classes. They were able to go on so long with the classes due to non-disclosure agreements. In 2003, they also sued the Ross Institute, alleging copyright infringement for publishing excerpts of content from its manual in 3 critical articles and posted publicly online. He posted a secret manual of the psychiatrist's assessment, and it was listed on the website that was called Expensive Brainwashing. Taking a closer look into their practices and operations, they used a hierarchy class system using different colored scarves to move up in ranks. NXIVM drew up a 12-point mission statement which participants recited during classes, pledging to purge themselves of all parasite and envy-based habits. This would enroll others to ethically control as much of the money, wealth, and resources of the world as possible with the success plan. These classes would be 12 hours long for 16 consecutive days. One price was $7,500 with classes divided into modules. Relationship sourcing is an example of one of the modules where students were instructed to explore benefits they would receive in the event of a partner's sudden death. You know, I'm really curious what was happening in this segment, like a lesson of life insurance. Oh, hey, your partner died. Fuck your emotions. Bottle that shit up and look, here are the benefits of them dying. And just remember, Vanguard is your savior. Another module, Dracula and his ghouls, reportedly discuss psychopaths and their followers. So, in these ESP classes, if they were actively doing research on other cults or psychos, I wonder how they were able to mask so well that they were a healthy program. Let's ignore all of the red flags and take Dracula and his ghouls seriously. Somehow, they also ran a children's organization called Rainbow Cultural Garden, where kids would be exposed to 7 different languages. Others were taught in past lives that they were high-ranking Nazis. A member had a medical doctor perform an experiment where they would monitor her heart rate and muscle reactions, watching footage of people getting murdered.
The doctor faced 24 professional conduct mischarges, including moral unfitness to practice medicine. Government officials finally prosecuted and ended their operations as of late September of 2020.
So this group, let's backtrack a little bit, founded in 1998, was somehow able to keep going until September of 2020, all simply due to legal issues and non-disclosure agreements. Let's move on to the next chapter. Diving into number 2, People's Temple. The People's Temple was commonly known as Disciples of Christ. It was an American new religious organization which existed between 1954 and 1978. It was founded in Indiana by Reverend Jim Jones. They spread a message of combined ideologies of Christianity with communist and socialist views. Jones had previously observed a faith healing service at the Seventh-day Baptist Church and concluded that the healings could attract people and generate income to help fulfill his social goals. Members had knowingly faked the healings because they found that the increased faith generated financial resources to help the poor and finance the church. Aside from the awful scandal, I mean, at least they helped the poor, right? They began to expand over the years and eventually made their way to California. He and 140 members relocated there to reestablish the church. He was very conflicted with some of the views of the Bible, but also believed that there were great lessons to be learned from the book. He created the letter Killeth, pointing out where he noticed the absurdities, the contradictions, and the atrocities in the Bible. Jones preached that the divine principle equated love with socialism. He had stated that the Bible looked up to theoretically a false god. The recruitment began growing from a couple hundred upwards to a few thousand by the mid-1970s. The temple used 10 to 15 Greyhound buses, cruisers, to transport members up and down California freeways each week for recruitment and fundraising. Jones always rode in bus number 7, which contained armed guards in a special section lined with protective metal plates. He told the members that the temple would not bother scheduling a trip unless it could net at least $100,000, and the temple's goal for annual net income from just simply bus trips was $1 million. And that was all from just bus trips. I couldn't imagine the tremendous growth. It eventually transpired for them to purchase an island named Jonestown in Guyana. The temple's San Francisco headquarters was seized by national media and the relatives of Jonestown victims. So once they purchased this island, the temple members gathered in 1979. I'm actually scrolling down a little bit so that way I can explain what happened, and I just want to kind of narrow down the timelines. Okay, so I'm not sure of the date, but basically what happened is they purchased the temple purchased an island, and they had a mass suicide. The mass killing became one of the best known events in U.S. history, and it was measured by the Gallup poll and appeared on the cover of several newspapers and magazines, including Time, especially for months afterward. In addition to everything, according to various press reports, after the Jonestown suicides, surviving temple members in the U.S. announced their fears of being targeted by a hit squad, which would be composed of Jonestown survivors. Very similarly, the Associated Press reported a U.S. congressional aide's claim that they were white, brainwashed assassins out from Jonestown awaiting the trigger word to pick up their hit. Temple insider Michael Prokes, who had been ordered to deliver a suitcase which contained temple funds which were supposed to be transferred to the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, killed himself in March 1979, 4 months after the Jonestown incident. In the days leading up to his death, Prokes sent notes to several people, together with a 30-page statement he had written about the temple. They reprinted one copy in his Chronicle column.
Prokes then arranged for a press conference in Modesto, California, motel room, during which he had to read a statement to 8 reporters who attended. He then excused himself, entered a restroom, and fatally shot himself in the head. Before the tragedy, Temple member Paula Adams engaged in a romantic relationship with the ambassador to the United States, Lawrence Bonnie Mann. Eventually, they got married. Well, on October 24th, 1983, Mann fatally shot both Adams and the couple's child, and then fatally shot himself. Defecting member Harold Cordell lost 20 family members on the evening of the poisonings. Oh my gosh. So, that pretty much wraps up that one. There was a little bit confusing notes at the end, so I do apologize. But diving into number 3, Children of God. Children of God is a religious group that originated in California in 1968. Because its leaders have historically limited members' access to the outside world and asked to give up their money and worldly possessions, Children of God is generally considered a cult. The group became notorious when news stories emerged accusing its members of sexually abusing children. Children of God, now known as the Family International, is still active today. The cult's early beginnings are rooted in the counterculture movement of the late 1960s. Founder David Berg, a pastor and evangelist for the Christian and Missionary Alliance, became the leader of a youth ministry called Teen Challenge in Huntington Beach, California in 1967. Berg recruited his members out of hippies and outcasts that flocked to Southern California during the Free Love era and organized a group of young people to roam the streets going on about the love of Jesus. In 1969, Berg left the National Teen Challenge group and formed his own group called Light Club, which eventually became known as the Children of God. He changed his name to Moses David and married a second wife, stating that polyamory was sanctioned by the Old Testament. He told his followers that God had appointed him as the end time prophet, and he would be playing a significant role in the second coming of Christ, who would soon be returning to earth. Berg also maintained that he had been in touch with a spirit guide named Abraham, who was relaying divine messages to him. After claiming that God himself had gifted him with prophecies, Berg soon began making extreme demands of his followers. New members of COG were asked to donate everything they could and just basically give up everything that they owned to bring Christ back to earth. They were also encouraged to give up any sort of employment and become full-time, basically, slaves for Christ. Children of God formed communes across the country, and within just a few years, there were over 120 communities located around the globe. In the mid-1970s, Berg began to encourage the female members of Children of God to practice what he was called flirty fishing. Based upon Jesus' injunction in Matthew 4:19, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men," Berg instructed his female followers to go to bars, pick up men, and seduce them into converting and joining Children of God. Berg stated that his cult members had witnessed over 250,000 souls, loved over 25,000 of them, and won about 19,000 to the Lord. Berg changed the group's name to the Family of Love, and later changed again to simply the Family. Sexual contact with potential converts became a routine practice within the group's membership, and in some cases, the Family even used to escort services to identify potential targets for recruitment. The practice of sexual sharing and open sexual relationships between existing members were encouraged. The Family issued a press release in 1989 and the official statement condemning sexual acts involving minors and announced that any member found to be abusing children would be immediately excommunicated.
Former members of Children of God have outspoken about the childhood abuse they suffered growing up in Children of God communes. Actress Rose McGowan lived with her parents in a group in Italy until she was 9 years old. In her memoir, Brave, she wrote about her early memories of being beaten by cult members and recalled how the group advocated for sexual relationships between adults and children. A letter arrived from the Children of God leader, Moses David, encouraging adults to teach children how to have sex, claiming it was healthy and good. And so the sexual abuse began. I was violated in this way from the age of 12 too many times that I care to remember, but sex was encouraged with children who are far younger. There were other former members that are notable. Jaquin Phoenix, journalist Susan Dupay, and Fleetwood Mac co-founder Jeremy Spencer. Following Berg's death in 1994, the family was taken over by his widow, Karen Zerbe. In 1995, the group was the subject of a British lawsuit. Following a trial relaying the custody of a children born into the cult, the Lord Justice Ward wrote a 295-page opinion on the family. Ward determined that the group had permitted sexual abuse of minors, deliberately isolated and took children away from their parents, and used extensive corporal punishment. They also concluded that by the time of the trial, these practices had ceased, and they believed that the family was not presently an unsafe environment for children. The Family International is still an active group. Former members continue to speak up about the abuse that they faced, but they are still active today. Last but not least, Heaven's Gate. 2,000 years ago, a crew of members of Kingdom of Heaven, who are responsible for nurturing gardens, determined that a percentage of the human plants of the present civilization of this garden, Earth, had developed enough, but some of those bodies might be ready to be used as containers for soul deposits. Upon instruction, a member of the Kingdom of Heaven then left behind his body at the next level. Kind of similar to putting in a closet, like a suit of clothes that don't need to be worn for a while. You come to Earth, and you get moved into an adult human body that had been prepped for this particular task. The body that was chosen is called Jesus. The member of the Kingdom of Heaven who was instructed to incarnate into that body did so at his father's instruction. He moved into or took over that body when it was 29 or 30 years old. At the time, referred to as baptism by John the Baptist, was tagged into the formative period that to be receptacle of a new next level representative. And even that just tagging gave the vehicle some unique awareness of its upcoming. The sole task was given to this member from the Kingdom of Heaven was to offer the way leading the membership to Kingdom of Heaven, to those who recognized him for who he was and chose to follow him. The Kingdom of Heaven is at hand meant, since I am here and I am from the Kingdom, if you leave everything of this world and follow me, I can take you into my Father's Kingdom. Only those individuals who had received a deposit containing the soul's beginning had the capacity to believe or recognize that the Kingdom of Heaven's representative. They could get to his father only through total reliance upon him. He later sent his students out with the good news of the Kingdom of Heaven is at hand, and his followers could then help gather the flock so that the shepherd might teach others what was required of them to enter the Father's house. Leaving this world included family, sensuality, selfish desires, your human mind, and even your human body if it's required of you. All mammalian ways, thinking, and behavior. Since he had been through this metaphoric transition, himself from human to level above human, under the guidance of his father, he was qualified to take others through that same discipline and transition. Remember, the one who incarnated in Jesus was sent for one purpose only. To say, if you want to go to heaven, I can take you through that gate. It requires everything of you. Our mission is exactly the same. I am in the same position to today's society as the one that was Jesus then. My being here now is actually a continuation of the last task I was promised to those who were students 2,000 years ago. They are here again, continuing in their own overcoming, while offering the same transition to others. Our only purpose is to offer the discipline and grafting required on the transition into membership into my father's house. My father, the older member, came with me for the first time and a half to assist on the task because of its present difficulty. So basically, this is just kind of an article that I got from the website itself going over Heaven's Gate and what exactly it is. Kind of similar to People's Temple. They also gathered a lot of their members to have like a meeting. They drank liquid and then it was kind of like a mass suicide. So that way they could try to get to Heaven's Gate. And they were strongly believing that they can get reconnected with the Father by going ahead and proceeding with that process. So share my podcast, show your friends, and the more you guys want to hear about cults, more content is soon to come. I also did create a Patreon, so you can find me on there as well, Patreon Lasky. Also check me out on SoundCloud if you ever get an opportunity. I just released a new single, Broken and Hollow. You can find Lasky, Lasky, at SoundCloud. Don't forget to subscribe for more podcasts, and I look forward to talking to you guys soon.